What's up, beautiful people, and welcome to Inside Out Empowerment, where we are examining the science of personal excellence through the very real experience of today's most powerful thinkers, professional athletes, and the world's greatest entrepreneurs. We learn the mechanisms for designing the life and the results of our dreams, starting from the inside out. I'm entrepreneur Joshua Nussbaum and your host. Just watch me now. What's up, beautiful people? It's Joshua Nussbaum here. Today, I am here with my buddy and fellow top 10 podcaster, intellectual gangster, Rob Moore. First of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Josh.
Question for you. I noticed you're like, you know, 8-time best-selling author, and in the intro to The Disruptive Entrepreneur, check it out if you guys haven't already, it says that you're a 2-time world record holder. What are you a world record holder for?
Longest speech marathon for an individual, which was 47 hours nonstop, and then longest team speech marathon. So basically, I get paid to talk a lot.
Team speech marathon. Holy shit. What was the format of that guy?
So the individual one was me speaking for 47 hours straight. And then the team one, we did 120 hours between four of us. So I probably did about 40 hours for that.
Where were you speaking?
We've got a training facility over there. So we have about a training room which can hold about 250 people at the top. Just did it there. We did it on property because that's one of my companies, one of my businesses. And yeah, you know, like, it's funny, you think, how can I talk for that long? But when you're really passionate about something, you can just go off on it. And I wouldn't say it was like 47 hours went like that. On the third morning, when I'd spoken all through the night for the second time, my voice completely went, but I had to carry on. So I was talking with no voice, but they don't allow you any pauses. You can't like stop and just sort of get your composure, because otherwise then you're not speaking nonstop. So you just have to keep talking, which my wife says I can do.
I was going to say, I know a couple people in my life that would say that that's not a problem for me.
Yeah.
And what did you bring, like the Guinness book? Would you have to call the people that are, you have the Guinness book there, Guinness Book of World Records?
Oh, it's really official what they do. They bring a guy over in a suit with a clipboard and he sits and reviews all the footage and checks everything.
He has a clipboard?
Oh, that makes it official, yeah.
That's how you know it's the real thing. You know, the Guinness book was actually invented to sell more beer. Mm. It was by Guinness in bars. They just started writing down records so people would stay and be interested and read longer while sitting at the bar. And they were telling pubs in Ireland, when people read the Guinness book, make sure you're serving them Guinness. And if we can keep them in your bar for a longer period of time, make sure that you're serving them our beer. And it turned out to be an official thing. One of those, like, I don't know, fuck ups that ends up being not a fuck up later, you know?
Like the post-it note that didn't stick properly, that kind of thing.
Or penicillin. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Cool.
Touché, sir. So you have a lot of stuff going on. You strike me as a fellow entrepreneurial ADD type guy. You've got enough talent in there, evidently, to, you know, make a couple of them stick. What are you most excited about right now of all your projects that you got going on in your life?
Oh man, it's hard to say because I get excited about a lot of things. I'd say right now I really am excited about podcasting, which is obviously how we connected. And so that's a cool thing, meeting great people like yourself. I've just met so many great people podcasting. You know, you get to meet some big names who you'd never normally meet before if you didn't have a podcast. And it's great because it gets you out there to the world, connecting with people, hopefully helping people, making a difference. But, you know, like, you'll record this podcast. This will be an asset for many years. Once we've finished, that's it. It's done. It's an asset. And you've got it for years. And I'm a property guy. And I always used to think that property was the best asset. You know, you buy your property, you rent it out, it's done. But you always have tenant issues, boiler issues, no tenants and no boilers in a podcast. So, I'm quite fortunate with Progressive and Unlimited Success, my other companies. They're mostly managed. We have about 75 staff. I have an MD that runs the companies. So, I mean, I'm excited by them, obviously, but I'm not in them day to day. So, podcasting probably.
I like that. I like that about you. And which piece of podcasting do you like the best? Because I know podcasting can get a little bit, it can get tedious. Because in the beginning, you're like, fuck, if I could just like spit my truth and do that for a living and just like, you know, speak from the heart and from the mind and like do what I know how to do and get paid and, you know, create a revenue stream. And like you said, assets that potentially could be evergreen. And obviously you talk about relevant issues, but you tie them into greater threads. Mm. But then once you've actually achieved success at it, you're like, holy shit, I got to come up with some more content. I got to stay on this. I got to keep doing it. And like, you know, people ask what I do and I tend to answer them. I do whatever the fuck is necessary, you know, because that's all entrepreneurship is solving the problems, is outthinking situations, right? At least by my definition, I think, you know, you're an entrepreneur or you're not. You're a guy that, you know, delivers solutions or delivers problems. And it's funny because the success from podcasting creates a shit ton of inflow and people that want to hear from you and people that like want to know what's up and want to book you for shows and want to be on yours, et cetera. You have to stay in that game and stay on top of it and keep doing it. And they don't give a shit if your properties don't have tenants in them. They don't give a shit if you're having boiler problems, like, or one of a billion other things, or your supplements are backed up, or your manufacturer missed their delivery date, or something got held up in custom. They don't give a shit. They're like, get on the fucking microphone and give me some truth, you know? So what part of podcasting specifically, besides for connecting with people, do you think suits like your nature the best?
Yeah, well, I'm a bit of a rebel inside, and I like to express myself freely. Like you said, spit the truth. I've never heard it said like that, but I think that that's great. Now, if I was interviewed on BBC Radio, if I was on TV or in a documentary, I'd be worried about how they're going to edit me. I'd have to be careful what I say. Got to come out with some sound bites. In a podcast, you say whatever you want. Now, I like to balance expressing myself with what my listeners want. I don't just want to talk about me and my interests because they're not interested in that. So if I can balance expressing what I love to talk about with what serves them, that's the best part. When you do that with really interesting people, I know you said accept meeting interesting people, but you put that flavor together of you expressing what you want freely without being edited or judged, and then you mix that with someone else who's doing the same thing. You create this whole unique thing, and people just tend to love it. And I think, you know, Joe Rogan's a bit of a disruptor in this space in regard of 3 hours worth of just, hey, man, what are you up to? And then just talking about everything. And there's these little pockets of magic that come out. And I love every day thinking, you know what? I don't know what's going to happen today. I'm hopefully going to discover something new. So, and the fact that you build this great remote connection, you know, we met each other because I'm addicted to the podcast charts. It's very sad. I shouldn't admit it, but I'm always looking at the charts. And I'm like, this guy's American and he's top of the English charts. What is he doing? Because I'm not top of the American charts. I'm like, I've got to meet this guy.
Fucking weird, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if it's that I'm curt, that I'm brash, that I am a marathon talker myself, although I think you put me to shame in that capacity, or that like my social media people like had me pegged for the longest time for like a meathead. And I'm really like, I'm an internet nerd. You know what I mean? Like people that have been following Rev Labs Prez and like, you know, saw me at 240 pounds and doing the bodybuilding thing and the supplement thing. They thought I was, you know, just like a fucking juice monkey, right? And I started, and when they got exposed, as the Instagram stories started to come out, and I started to take speaking engagements, and obviously Inside Out Empowerment podcast came out. People were like, dude, I had no idea how you were. And I'm like, that's funny, because if you go back and you read through every one of my posts, I'm just verbalizing the same shit I was typing. You just weren't reading it. You know what I mean? You're looking at the ads, not like using your eyes to fucking learn something. But nevertheless, I think it's cool, and it's made at least my following evolve in a way that is way more conducive to like my authentic nature, as opposed to like playing the Instagram game with like, who am I shouting with and how hard am I engaging with my audience? This is more of like a one-way channel where it's like, let me connect with high-level people because I fucking love learning. I love seeing the greatness in people. Like, I always tell people, I'm like, dude, look for, like, people are complaining about an employee, complaining about an employee, complaining about an employee. I'm like, look at me. I want you to look for the things that impress you about somebody, and that's what they'll show you. Mm. If you're constantly fucking nitpicking, and this is coming from a perfectionist and an erotic motherfucker, so like, it's not like I don't understand that way of thinking, but if you're looking for the gaps and the flaws and the holes in something, that is what you'll find. Mm. You know, I was like 21 when I got certified in neurolinguistic programming, which seemed like a lifetime ago. And they did an experiment showing us how like your reticular activating system, your RAS, as they say, my teacher would joke around and say, your world comes out of your RAS, your reticular activating system, the muscle in your brain that tells your conscious mind what to focus on and what to let just slip by you. And he's like, look around the room and tell me everything that's a color, like brown. Look around the room. Tell me everything you see that's brown. And I want you to memorize it because I'm going to have you close your eyes in a second. So you're looking around the room for all the brown, right? Then you close your eyes and he's like, cool. Now I want you to tell me everything that you saw that was yellow, you know? And like the list is like, you know, this big, cause your mind wasn't like set. Your reticular activating system wasn't set to be perceiving those things. And then when you open, he's like, now open your eyes. How many more things do you see that are yellow? Right. I think to pull this full circle, and it's a long train of thought, I get it. Podcasting sets you up to be seeing the greatness in other people. And when you get to shine a spotlight on the things like, dude, this crazy motherfucker out of the UK, I love his manic style. Like you said, people call you frantic. I'm like, I get manic all the time. And like you said, dude, the high low thing, I can relate to that too. Way less since I've been like, you know, sober for however long, but like, you know, I'd get on my fucking tears and work for like 5 days fucking straight and then like crash and be like, everyone get away from me. And neither are a good place to make a decision from. This is a really great outlet to be able to like rev the energy up, right? To like call on someone who has strengths that you don't and like assets that you admire, connect with, shine light on it, empower, create, like you said, like little bits of magic in a lot of talking of abstract random bullshit. Mm-hmm. And then you piece it together and you listen to it and you're like, holy shit, that was a really great conversation that never would have occurred but for us both having podcasts.
Mm. Yeah, I completely agree. It's just this, I feel like it's the medium that's going to explode, because if you think about how media was in the UK, there's like BBC and of course there's Sky that owns the world, and of course there'll be the big American versions of those. And now anyone can have a YouTube channel, a podcast, and just go and talk about what they're interested in. I interviewed Grant Cardone when he came to the UK. And probably this really hit me hard, because when someone like Grant Cardone would have come to the UK 5 years ago, because he's got a good following here, he'd book TV and radio gigs all day.
Yep.
He didn't do one TV show, one radio. He did all podcasts. Uh-huh. I thought, you know, I've got Grant Cardone, that's great. But he did about another 7 podcasts, back to back to back to back to back. So he's turning down TV and radio to be on podcasts. And like,
fucking love, you know, that about him.
Yeah. And I'm, you know, like, I've not come from a place of celebrity. Obviously, there are plenty of podcasters who were celebrities before. I'm just a guy who set up a business, who didn't have anything to start with, who, you know, as you would say in America, hustled away for a few years, you know, made a few million quid, did all right. And then all that. And like, I sweat blood for like 9 years to build my property company, you know, got that to like, my best year was £19 million in that company. And no one outside.
What is the exchange rate? What is the exchange rate right now?
Two to probably one? $25 million, something like that. 25, 26 million in a year turnover. You know, no one really knew me for that. And now people stop me everywhere I go and go, hey, you're the podcaster guy. I'm like, no, I'm this guy and this guy. No, you're the podcaster guy. That's what they recognize me for.
Yep.
Like, yep. And it's kind of cool.
It's awesome. Growing up, I didn't really, you know, fit in that well. That's a huge understatement. I was like an odd duck. I've always been a weird guy, you know? And then I became comfortable with that and became, you know, a leader. And, you know, we have over 100 employees, over 4 companies that we're running in the same like family of companies with, you know, the same, mostly the same partner group. And people hadn't said shit. And then when the podcasting came out, they're like, holy shit, you did well for yourself. Dude, your podcasting thing clicked. I'm like, yeah, that's what clicked. No, you haven't talked to me in 15 years. You know what I mean? No, we have a lot. We've covered a lot of ground with a lot of like eating our way through shit and blood, sweat, and tears, building like people. I'm like, if you can get a whole brick in at a time, that's great. But like Rome wasn't built brick by brick. It was built like, you know, building the bricks that build the walls, that build the whatever. And people like, you know, they don't understand. You have to treat the little things like big things and the big things like little things, right? If you work yourself up every time you have like your shot and you like build it up in your mind of like, you know, you got to get it up if you want to get it in, right? Ignore that. my assistant looks over. You have to like prepare for the opportunities. And if you trip yourself up, like, oh my God, this is the thing I'm doing, you're probably going to choke, or at least you're not helping the odds. And then when you're doing like the grindy bullshit little stuff, you have to sit there and treat it like it's a big fucking thing, because you have to run it like it's a $1 million business. Otherwise, it never will become that. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I can relate 100% to like 9 years building your baby, you know, blood, sweat, and tearsing to build your business. And now you're the podcaster guy. You're like, dude, I've been doing that for like 2 years.
It almost pisses me off a bit. It's like, what about this other shit I did?
Yeah. You're like, improper allocation of your credit, but thank you for the validation. Although it is misallocated. I like it. Dude, you know what I like that you did? I was like on my way to work and I'm like, hell yeah. Also, hell yeah. Also, hell yeah. Listening to your podcast was the last you did on failure.
Mm.
Do you think that, what do you think the number one thing is that's holding at least the people you work with or the people you don't need to speak on like on behalf of humankind as a whole, but like in your experience, what is the one thing holding people back from success or trying at and failing at with regard to success? What are you seeing that is the number one barrier that people are needing to overcome or doing wrong and needing to shift or omit between them and kicking ass at whatever they're doing? Is it the fear of failure, or is that one of them?
I think if I were to put it into one thing, pressure on one thing, because there are a lot of things, but one thing is actually fear of being judged and what other people think about you and that public shame. Because if you didn't worry what anyone thought about you, you'd take more risks and you'd dance with failure. If you didn't take yourself quite so seriously, if you made a mistake, you'd have a joke about it. You go, oh, well, you know, I'm a bit of an idiot, but let me have another go. So, like, I have struggled my whole life with worrying and being sometimes scared or just frozen about what other people would think about me. I used to be really overweight as a kid. I always needed people's, like, validation because I wasn't the third fattest kid. I was the fattest kid. And when you're the second fattest kid, you can always go, hey, look, he's fatter than me. But I was the first fattest kid. So all the jokes were on me. But the problem was with this is they weren't, most of the time, they weren't even talking about me. I'd see them whispering because I'd think they're talking about me. They're not, they're too busy with their own problems. Everyone else is too busy with their own problems, their own life, their own worries. They're not thinking about that. And I was like, I got so angry and so I felt so ostracized that I starved myself between one school and another. In England, we have about 8 weeks off in the summer holidays of school. And I literally starved myself for 8 weeks. I lost all the weight and I thought that I'd just be a changed person and all my problems would have been liberated. The weight had gone, but still the need to please and be accepted and loved by other people was there. And that just stayed with me. And then when I got into personal development, reading and listening to books and doing courses and, you know, studying all the personal development, you know, the Jim Rohn, Tony Robbins, John DeMartini, mm-hmm. all these great thought
leaders. Never heard of them.
Yeah, exactly. I realized actually, you know, like I don't have to own this and I can learn better strategies. And there's definitely still in there. And I think it's good to be in there because if it isn't in there, I wouldn't care about my podcast. I wouldn't do my public speeches. I wouldn't want to help people. I wouldn't be concerned about what people say about me online. I wouldn't care about my customers. Everything in life is a paradox, isn't it? You know, you train hard, you build your muscle. You overtrain, you deplete your muscle. You know, you train too hard, you get an injury. So everything is in balance. And so I feel like if we can balance caring about people and helping people, but not too much caring about what they say and judge about us and doing our thing that's right and not fearing the mistakes, but embracing them, I think that's the biggest problem that people have. And if you can let go of that, I think your life is just a million times better.
I think that's wildly insightful. And I like that it's starting from a place of failing or not being good at it, because that's where a lot of opportunity is explosively born from, is being really fucking bad at something.
Ooh.
You know what I mean? The reason I can type like a goddamn animal is because I started when I was in second grade, way before typing was a thing, because I have a motor skills disorder where like brain to hand doesn't work when it comes to like forming letters and shapes. And I was literally in like a special ed class, despite being, you know, very intelligent as a kid, because I literally could not for the motherfucking life of me learn how to write in cursive. I just couldn't do it. You know, I was like in third grade, 9 years old, and I'm doing like the kindergartner fucking like, do the circle, do the line. That's how you make an A. And I'm like writing like off the fucking page. And like, they thought I was being like rebellious and then thought I was being like class clown. And I literally just could not form shapes. And now I'm just, you know, like typing, you know, for the longest time prior to it even becoming a thing, which led to my love for computers and analytics and like a lot of the opportunities that I've had. Because
can I just make a comment about that, Josh?
Absolutely.
This is so important. I've got a good friend who's worth 100 million quid and he's completely dyslexic. And at school, you know, the teachers thought there was something wrong with his brain. And a lot of my really successful friends had big challenges at school. And so I'd love to say to anyone that feels that they're dyslexic or they've got some kind of labeled bullshit, you know, you are this, you are that, because you're not normal, that you should not own that. And actually, sometimes that shame of not fitting in is the driver that makes you go out and build a £100 million company. And I know if I didn't have some of that shame as a kid, I wouldn't have the drive and the motivation to want to help and impress people. And again, it's a paradox, because if I get too, you know, consumed by it, it can hurt. But yeah, I just think there's a lot. Life needs individuals, weirdos, geeks, unique people. We need all types. You know, I'm really not into this, hey, you know, everyone's got to be normal. Especially if you want to be an entrepreneur and you want to run your own business. Being different is good.
I'm sorry, what is the first word in the name of your podcast?
Disruptive.
Disruptive. Yeah, you don't disrupt shit by being normal. No one that's ever created anything great did it by being normal. And I don't even think that there is such thing as normal. To speak to your opinion of like that paralyzing fear, that incapacitating reservation of what the fuck people think about you. People often compliment me being like, dude, you don't give a fuck what people think. You just do what you want. Da da da. And I'm going, dude, I don't know what you're looking at that gives you that perception. I am a sensitive motherfucker. I care very much about what people think. Like, that's not the case. Someone tells me like, you're a piece of shit. All Jews are shitty. All millionaires are this, all whatever, you know, like you're divorced and I don't believe in divorce and whatever the fuck they want to box, they want to put me in. I let all of that shit in. I let all of it. I listen intently. I take it as feedback. Here's the thing. If they tell me I'm amazing or they tell me I'm a piece of fuck, I don't let it dictate anything about my self-worth. There's a huge difference between what I do and who I am. I am an infinitely capable being. I'm a leader. I'm a lover. I'm a caretaker. I'm a fucking gangster entrepreneur. I'm a hustler. I'm a hard worker. I'm a weirdo. I'm an internet geek. I'm a weightlifter. I'm a bodybuilder. I'm a lot of different things. How good I do at shit doesn't dictate my self-worth or my identity with myself. You know what I mean? I don't feel good about fucking up a speech or not doing something as well as I could have or messing up an edit or stepping too far over the line and being like, well, I probably owe some people apologies for that one or whatever, right? Those don't feel good. But I never turn around and go back internally and be like, wow, I suck as a person or my value of who I am and how much I love me. Those are non-negotiable things and they're not tied to my production. You know what I mean? Like I have people that like I fire and I go, and I really fucking love you. Like I really, really, really like you. So this has nothing to do with you, even though it's you that's getting fired. You know what I mean? But it's just, but it's honest. It's true. So I think if people can separate who they are and what they're doing, who they are and how well they're doing, their identity of how much love and worth and value they give to themselves, regardless of how well they're doing. Because I can tell you something, you catch me on like 20 milligrams of Adderall, I guarantee you I'm going to be more interested in what you're saying than if you catch me after when I'm hungover early in the morning. Like, you know what I mean? I have different frames, I have different modes, I have different factors of like what's going on in my life. And I don't allow my performance, like when I'm winning, to be like, that's right, I'm impervious, motherfuckers. I've told you I've been good all this time. Just like when I'm losing, I'm not like, oh, fucking shucks, poor me, blah, 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 like Winnie the Pooh status, right? Like I am who I am. And like people that come in and I have this guy, Kevin, interning for me. And it's funny because he was actually a very, very overweight kid. And he DM'd me like 5 years ago or something, being an overweight dude, being like, you know, I don't really have any like mentors. I want to get into fitness. I have no one that like I really like look up to. I'm getting picked on in school. Wrote me a long letter. I hope you're listening to this, by the way, Kevin. And my ambassador people were laughing, you know, because he was like a 14-year-old guy wanting to be a Rev Labs ambassador and like filled out the application, took it very seriously. I'm like, fuck you and fuck you. You, when you were foreign and like this was your second language and you didn't speak English, never would have had the guts to write what this kid just wrote. And you, when you were like up at your farm and like people as a kid were teasing you for being a lesbian and you were da 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 and like you had your bangs and hadn't found your like femininity yet, you would never have the fucking balls to throw yourself out there like that. Tell this kid he gets whatever the fuck he wants and he's a Rev Labs ambassador and he has to request it from me personally. This was like four or 5 years ago. He's now like 6'2", handsome as fuck, and jacked as hell. And hit me up and was like, dude, I'm going to college. I don't know what the hell I want to do, my parents are telling me to go to school. I really don't want to go to school unless it's a requirement of Rev Labs to get a college degree, to which I answered, it's absolutely fucking not a requirement of Rev Labs. What do you want to do in life? He's like, all I want to do is work for Rev Labs. I'm like, all right, then fucking skip the college thing. Come out here and intern for me for 2-3 weeks. See if we can figure anything out. And then maybe I'll send you on your way. Maybe I'll find a place for you. That was 3 months ago. He's still living with me and my family. Mm. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like,
he was thank God he was a fat kid.
Yeah.
That had the self love to put himself in a better position. Mm. He works and he sits right the fuck next to me all goddamn day. And he's like, you know what I've learned about you? And I'm like, hopefully more than one thing. He's like, you are the same exact guy talking on your podcast as talking to your lenders, as talking to your father, as talking to your son. Mm. You know, as talking to your people. Like, you're very, how do you make, like, I'm different when I talk to you and when I talk to my parents. And I'm like, yeah. And that works until you have about 70 different dynamics and then 120 employees and then 5 different companies. And you can't keep track of all of it past a certain point where you just surrender and you're like, all right, I'm going to be me and I'm going to let my audience come to me. And I'm going to listen to what the haters say. I'm going to listen to what my fans say. And I'll tailor my act in what I'm putting effort into producing, but I'm not going to tailor my act in changing who I am as a result of it. Mm. And that stays very separate in my mind of who I am, who I am and what I'm producing. Mm. You know? So I don't know. Failure is part of the process. I would be interested to talk to someone that's like, I don't want to do this because I'm worried about failing. I've done a podcast on failure isn't just likely. It's inevitable. It's guaranteed and it's necessary in order to level your shit up. You have to have at least micro failures. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are looking, aren't they, for failure to be gone and to not experience it. And I think that's a delusion. I went to Scotland this week. My son was playing in the European Under 7 Golf Championships and we've made really good.
How old's your boy?
He's 7. Yeah, he's just turned 7.
What does he shoot?
He was 23rd out of 41. He did all right. He didn't play his best. Some kids there are hitting it miles. There's kids that are they're 11. Yeah. They're on steroids. They're 11. Everyone's going.
You ever want to get humbled? Go play in a junior golf tournament. They'll bank you up and down the course all day long.
Yeah, some of the kids shoot better than adults. They're really good. But we've made really good friends with, in particular, one father and son. And just seeing Bobby and Matty together is just a beautiful thing. But Martin, his dad, turned to me and he said, Rob, now that you're doing well money-wise, I guess you've not got anything to worry about in life anymore. And it's just I could feel my jaw hit the floor. And, it was an innocent question. But I think people perceive that once you are rich or once you achieve X, then, the fear, the pain, everything that's hard in life goes away. Once you've got passive income from assets, you can sit on a beach and drink your, cocktails and everything else. When in reality, life is just all. I always think that if you solve a problem, your reward for solving the problem as is a fucking bigger one. That is your reward. It's pat on the back and you're amazing and here's an award. It's now you're big enough.
Less of those.
You're just big enough to take on the next level of problem.
Dude, no argument. No argument at all. It's funny. I was just on Amanda Bucci. Do you know who that is? Amanda Bucci Radio. She's a stud muffin of a chick. She's an Instagram influencer and business coach. And she got her start in fitness and vlogging and being an IG personality. We were talking about that the more you if you fail, you got some shit to deal with because you don't make rent and you got to make up an excuse and you got whatever you have to deal with, whatever you didn't make good on. But if you succeed, you got way more shit to deal with because that generates more opportunities, more people calling your ass, the next level of whatever that problem was.
More haters.
Yeah. Touche. Yeah. Touche. Mm. You think not making rent and worried about getting evicted is worrisome. Try getting a loan called for a chain of apartment complexes and you don't have the fucking cash and you're not liquid. That's a way bigger version of I'm not making rent. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Someone in the UK, I know he had $3 billion worth of loan called in the recession. He owned big shopping centers. went below his his loan to value covenants. Oh, we want $3 billion back now. Oh, all right, mate, I'll get out of my wallet. You know.
Yeah. I'll get back to you, please. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's so funny because I started. How old are you, Rob?
I'm 39.
I like how you had to think about that. I've gotten to the point where I'm like, carry the five. Yeah. I 2 weeks ago, I was again in a rant and like very like in my lane, and someone asked how old I was, and I was like, how old am I? I had to like really think about it for a second. I'm like 86, 96. Like do the math. I'm like, wait, yes, I am. I'm 32. It just sounded weird. I don't think I've said that yet. And I turned 32 like 6 months ago. Anyway, where were we? Lost my train of thought. Got it. I started my real estate career immediately like post the worst crash of like the history of the United States real estate markets, right? Like I started buying really hard. I owned like two properties, but started really investing hard in like 2010, 2011. And my father, who's a very successful, very long time real estate investor, came to me and goes, son, you can like, you know, flip a quarter out of a plane and whatever that quarter hits, you're going to make money on. Mm. Buying all cash in a market like this. Do not get used to. Do not like, I hate like seeing you like train and analyze markets and like develop your thought process for real estate in such a devastated, no bottomed market where you're cruising in with a couple million bucks being like, I'll take that one and I'll take that one at auction and I'll like steal this for, you know, 1/5 of what it sold for 2 years ago at the peak of market. Cause he's like, dude, I appreciate that you're buying everything and I think it's great as long as it fits your multiple strategy and blah, blah, blah. And I was buying in Las Vegas too. I don't know how familiar you are with the market, but like that was a construction-based economy. And when the world went to shit, the bottom fell out of Vegas. And I had been lucky enough that, you know, my senior year of San Diego State here, I started a company where I'm like, what do people need in 2008? I know they need money. You know, so I started a company as an entrepreneurship project my senior year, helping homeowners recover money for the cleanup of soot and ash after wildfires, because California is a big wildfire state, right? So in a down market, I'm like going around to people as a 21-year-old pissant little dude going like, hey, did you live within 10 miles of the wildfire? You know, you might be entitled to money for the cleanup of soot and ash because it was declared a natural disaster. And I'm like pushing my kid in the stroller, like knocking on doors till my hands are bleeding, selling insurance claims with a contract that probably wasn't even fucking legally binding because I wrote it myself and had like my marketing teacher look at it or something. That turned into like, you know, an 8-figure business and is now licensed in 32 states and has been running itself for however many years. But that was the right thing to go into like a complementary good, right? So like as the economy tanks, the demand for this goes up, which made it by 2010 or 2011 when we were buying really hard, a market that was like, you can't miss, right? Because everything is going to recover, especially if you're buying. I was either going to go to Vegas or Detroit. And my dad's like, do not go to Detroit. That fucking, like, they're a manufacturing place that has lost manufacturing and it will probably never recover to where it was sub high. Mm. I was totally that guy, Rob, that like had that perception in my mind, like, oh, passive income. And then I get to like sit on the beach in Maui, ironically, where my dad lives now, sitting on the beach in Maui. But he's also like, you know, 63, right? Mm. So he's put in a little more work than, you know, than You buy a handful or you buy, you know, you build your portfolio and then you get to chill out. It's like, no, then you own, you know, 80 properties and you have to figure out all of the shit that comes along with owning 80 properties that you are completely ill-equipped for and can never get educated to do until you do it. There's no podcasting school. And even if there are courses and even if there are this and there's that, you learn by fucking doing it. Am I right? Like, yeah. I don't care how much you learned about real estate prior to doing it, how much more did you learn by building and going through the process and falling on your face and your ass and getting up and dusting yourself off and going back at it? I would venture to guess a lot more.
Yeah, I think I like to try and balance both. I think that you can certainly save a lot of mistakes if you get a good mentor, you know, like you having your dad would have helped. Someone who's like an intern now having bought 80 properties, that you'll save them a load of mistakes. But you can't buy real estate, like you say, in the classroom. You have to get out and you can learn everything, which I think is smart and can save you money, but you'll still make your own mistakes. And there'll be the niches of, and the nuances of Las Vegas versus Detroit versus London, you know, near where I am. So I like the kind of learn, do, review, repeat. Learn, cool. Do, review, repeat.
I'm more of like a ready, fire, aim type guy. And yeah. I always regret it. And then I'm like, wait, I'm happy I did that because then I learned this massive thing from fucking up. But I think your approach is much smarter.
It just saves a lot of the time and the mistakes, but it doesn't mean you're not going to make any. And it doesn't mean that, you know, just going on a course or having a mentor is going to save your life.
It just accelerates the learning and the growth. It makes you pay for the mistakes in advance by learning.
Yeah. You pay one way or another. So you choose how you pay.
Yeah, you're talking about learning preemptively. I'm just like, oh, I'll fucking like fall on my knees and dust them off and stand up and keep going. That's generally more expensive and more painful than what you're talking about.
And importantly as well, someone like you can do that, you know, because you're an entrepreneur, you know, like you said, you'll do what it takes. But a lot of people who haven't quite got the mettle for the industry that they're going in, if they make a big mistake early doors, they can just be gone for good. So you do have to be careful on the size of mistakes. What I would say, which I'd say make a lot of small mistakes, try not to make one massive one. You know, if you have a big loan called in and go bust, no one wants to make that mistake. You know, would you rather learn from your own mistakes going bust or learn from other people's mistakes going bust and you just learn iteratively? So what I try and do is reduce the risk of my mistakes completely wiping me out. So I like investing in lots of different classes. As soon as I make money in property, I put it somewhere else. I'm buying classic cars at the moment. I've been buying watches for years. You know, I've got various different training businesses. Not all of my company money is in one bank account in case someone comes in and scams and takes all the money or you have a problem with a staff member. So you know, you move it all around and you protect yourself. So if one of my companies has a lawsuit against them or, you know, a horrible thing could happen. I don't like to say these things, but one day someone might die in one of our properties or we might have a legal suit or some massive health and safety issue. If that's in one company, I've got the others. So if I make a mistake, and I'm the sort of person likely to say something that's going to get me in trouble as well.
Yeah. Great guy to give a microphone to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think you can de-risk up front making a lot of the mistakes. But you're right, there are a lot of people that are shy of taking action and shy of actually making even small mistakes. And I think you've got to reward yourself for the mistakes you make as well as the wins.
I love that. Literally, no matter what the news is, and I'm like, I've trained my VP and I've trained my girlfriend to be leaders as well. And they'll come in and we'll have like a shit ton riding on something. And I'm like, regardless of what they say the outcome is, as soon as they walk in, your response is fuck yeah. Mm. We either got it done or we learned something from it.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about like rah-rah bullshit, just like roses and rainbows and farting sprinkles on our employees in a way that's unproductive, right? Passing gas in the office or sprinkles in the office isn't really polite. I'm talking about like, awesome, cool. So you didn't get it done. What a fantastic opportunity. What's in the gap? You fell short. What needs to be bridged? Cool. Walk me through it. Let's see where I can identify or you can identify things that you could have done differently. And then we get to level that person up who can be bigger and better for you, for the company, for themselves, for like humanity as a whole, and maybe still get the deal done or maybe not get the deal done. But regardless, it's a win. If it's a loss, it's a win. And if it's a win, it's a win, obviously. I love how you just said celebrate your failures or like, said something like that, right? You know, because it's true.
I had the courage to try. No one else was trying it. I had the courage to try. I've grown through this process. I think what you said earlier, Josh, is so important about knowing the difference between you messing up and you as a person. You fail a lot, but you are not a failure. And the best successful people in the world fail so many times, but they don't take it all inside and say, I am a failure. No one is a failure. Everyone is worthy of love, especially of yourself. And actually, the more you fail small, the more successful you'll be.
No argument. So what do you do to help people that are reaching out to you? I'm not going to try my English accent on, but you know, saying, Rob, being the guy you are and having accomplished what you've accomplished, and now you're doing it very publicly, I want to do X, Y, and Z. I have a fear of failure. I have a fear of whatever, you know, the reticence, the thing that you were saying is holding a lot of people back. It's not even necessarily not knowing what to do. It's like having an idea, wanting to pursue it and just not. That would be your diagnosis, right? Mm. what is your prognosis for those people? What do you prescribe in order to overcome that? And then I want to know what kind of classic cars you currently have.
Okay, fine. So the first thing is, can you find someone who's been there and done it and learn from the mistakes they made? I'm really into learning vicariously and making mistakes vicariously. I've made plenty in my life, and it's, you know, in a way, Josh, it's okay for us to sit here and talk about this conceptually, but you and I both feel shit when things go wrong, and we have to coach ourselves through this by having self-talk. It's not just like your superheroes of the strong mind. Pain hurts no matter who you are.
Bro, I cry watching TV. I told you earlier, I'm a sensitive motherfucker. I really am. It doesn't mean I'm not tough as shit. You can be sensitive and tough, but like, dude, believe me, I know what you mean. Like, people think, dude, you're impervious. You don't give a fuck. You don't let, and I'm like, dude, I care more than anyone you know. Like, I'm highly, highly sensitive, which is one of my strengths, because I can read things that people can't read, and I can get in tune and in rapport with people way deeper than the average bear that is worried about like not feeling and not exposing themselves, because my heart's just wide fucking open. I just don't let it dictate who and what I am just because I feel it. And yeah, dude, you don't want shit to go bad because you give a huge fuck about what you're trying to get accomplished.
Give a huge fuck. I love it. Yeah. So I think try and find people who've succeeded in some way in the thing that you want to do. That's point one. But, and I did this all the time, don't stick them so much on a pedestal that you think they're some kind of hero, therefore you're some kind of loser.
No, you're made of the same stuff.
Exactly.
Everyone is.
Yeah. Now, one of my heroes for years was Arnold Schwarzenegger, and mostly because of how he was able to reinvent himself on his terms at his time. Recently, if you're into football, soccer, Zinedine Zidane, who manages Real Madrid, they just won the Champions League, and he bowed out and he said, I'm going out on my terms. You know, and he's made himself a legend. And Arnold Schwarzenegger says, I want to be a movie star on my terms. I want to be a politician on my terms. I want to save the world on my terms. I want to be a bodybuilder on my terms. Yeah. And he feels pain like everybody else. So I really like admire the guy. And so when I got to meet him, I spent quite a lot of time with him. To me, that was like a big thing. And I was so nervous. I felt totally and utterly unworthy. And then when I met him, he's quite a lot shorter than me, like this much shorter. And because in my mind, he's like 6'12".
Of course. Yeah.
2.5 meters. Yeah, and also he dyes his hair. His hair was like dyed this funny red. Now, I'm not saying, but the point is, like you said, he's a human being. He has fears. He has pains, you know, and like, and I actually thought, you know what? He's just a normal guy, but he keeps failing. He puts himself in uncomfortable positions. He has this like sadistic love of putting himself in uncomfortable positions. Like famously, do you remember in his autobiography, he talked about his calves, and everyone says he'd never be an Olympian, you know, or a world champion because he had skinny calves. So he wore shorts to show him, shame himself in his skinny calves. And everyone was saying you only train once or twice a week on your body parts. And he was training his calves every day. So he basically said, you know, I'm going to put myself in pain publicly to motivate me to succeed. And then what they say you have to do, I'm going to do it my way. And I'm going to win. And I love that about him. So finding someone that you admire and you want to be like. Now, this is an important thing, I think, that's really important, is a lot of people look at someone and they go, I like that person. I don't like that person. I want to be more like that person. I don't want to be like that person. I think Trump is a great example. Hey, look, it's noisier in America, but in most people in England don't like Trump. And I'm like, you're missing the point because you don't know the guy. And you're reading a soundbite on Twitter and you're judging the guy. But the guy is a businessman who got into power to be the president of the United States.
You got to fucking respect it.
Can't you learn something from that guy?
Right, and so right.
What I try and do is not go, I love you, I hate you. I try and go, what skills do you have that I can admire and respect? And, you know, you weren't given them on a silver platter. You worked for those. And how can I learn them? And then the traits about you I don't want. I just, okay, that's cool. That's not me. So I really do think you can learn and leverage from other people and just borrow the traits of the greats. Yeah, so if anyone's struggling, then find people who are successful, follow them, model their successful traits, and I would say get comfortably uncomfortable. Because, you know, there is a lot of people saying, hey, look, you've got to get really uncomfortable. But, you know, I know some of the things I've done in my life that have made me feel really uncomfortable. They've actually made me not want to do it again. And if you make yourself too uncomfortable, like, you know, if you got me in a leotard doing yoga, I'm like, I'm never doing that again. Never. That's it. I'm scarred for life. So getting yourself comfortable.
Challenge accepted.
No. Yeah, sorry. I think I've answered the questions.
No, all good. I'm enjoying it. I'm like sitting back. I'm like, dude, take the fucking wheel, bro. I like this. 47 hours. Let's do it. All right. So what is next for you in your podcasting and your coaching? Where are you at? And what is the next level of success look like for you? We've been bouncing around the top 10 for a minute. I'm super appreciative that you reached out and did that thing and had the balls to, like, I could have been a total prick. Sometimes I am, you know, you know, you're just, what's up, dude? I'm Rob. You know, yeah. Like how easy was that? Like, I think a lot of people could learn a lot just from that fucking at bat right there. Right. You know what, Gretzky, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Am I right? You know? And like, I bet you that interaction for you was not unique. I bet you take swing at a shit ton more pitches than the average bear does. Mm. I'm the same way. Yeah, I'm a machine gun.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Some of it will stick. Some bullets will hit some people. I think the important thing in the second part of your statement, which really resonates, is every time I reach out to someone and they don't reply or they sort of push me back, I feel rejection. You know, no one likes it. And I remember all the times when I was a kid when I didn't get the girl or I was shamed. And it's almost like when that person rejects me, even just an email saying, sorry, I'm a bit busy, but thanks for reaching out. I feel all that rejection my whole life bubble up. And that really teaches me something. It's not personal. You know, if someone doesn't respond, maybe they're busy. Maybe they didn't get my message. If someone knocks me back, okay, well, maybe it wasn't the right time. I interviewed Seth Godin for my podcast, who's obviously a massive guy in America. And he kicked me back twice. He was like, sorry, not the right time. Sorry, not the right time. And I love it when they say, sorry, it's not the right time, because that's better than not hearing from them.
Oh, God, you know, yes.
You've got to think. If they've taken the time to reply, there's something there. Mm-hmm. Now, you've got to balance this. I think patience versus persistence is another one of those paradoxes. Because I remember there's in England, our version of Shark Tank is called Dragon's Den. And there was one of the dragons. And I just like emailed and messaged this person like 5 times a week. Be persistent, you know, hustle. And in the end, she messaged me. She said, Rob, what the fuck do you want? Will you leave me alone? And like, she probably needed a restraining order on me. And I learned that just relentless persistence is on its own. It's kind of vacuous. It doesn't mean anything. So sometimes you've got to put a message out there and you've got to wait. And you've got to wait for someone to come back in their time.
Rob, I think that you are a very rare breed. And I agree with you, dude, because like I have my people that are like, bro, chill, relax. It's 4 in the morning and you've been going for 72 hours. You crazy asshole. Stop hitting them up. So like I can definitely relate to outflowing too much. But I think that most people are short-circuited by the opposite. Mm. Like very, very rarely. I mean, when I walk into my call center, I'll walk in with like the 50 fucking human beings on the phone and be like, it's not loud enough in here when people are on the phone. Like I like the murmur. I like the outflow. And when I'm talking to them and they're listening and I have a mic and I'm like speaking to them, I say, I want you to motherfucking call them until they tell you to go fucking kill yourself. And then, for good measure, I want you to call them one more time without breaking any telemarketing laws. But I want you to have that mindset. You know, don't have like, if they're in your lead list, don't have them on a fucking pad somewhere and be like, oh, well, I've tried 4 times over the last like year and a half. Maybe they're just not interested, you know, being like a fucking Eeyore about it. Like all, you know, no, dude, like eat that shit for breakfast. And like, I want you to get fucking 15 no's before you're clocked in. Yeah. I want you to be psychically asking people on the way to work, like outflowing energetically just to the fucking universe, just to constantly be in that mode. Because if you're just throwing, you know, asks and value bombs and knowledge and content and just reaching into your bag and chucking as like, as altruistically and self-servingly as possible at the same time, and you keep throwing that, you think you're throwing baseballs and truth bombs and all this shit. You're not, you're throwing fucking boomerangs. Just not all of them work. Yeah. And if you keep doing it, it's a numbers game. That's those things start looping back to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so dude, you get back what you put out.
Amen, which is what I tell my girlfriend. So it's time for you to start putting out, Liz. Let's do this. So dude, I saw that and respected the shit out of that with you personally. And then I started listening to you a year and a half ago. I didn't even know what a podcast was.
Yeah.
I was like, so in my freaking thing. And people kept telling me, you got to do this. You got to do this. And I was recording not knowing what a fucking podcast was. Like the irony of that is funny to me. That like a video or audio journal that I was just sitting there like, okay, let me record this piece. And I started actually from an Amazon business that I got tired of training the same people on the same shit. So I'm just like, all right, here's when you switch from merchant fulfilled to Amazon fulfilled. And here's why you would do it. And now whenever I had someone like moving into my fulfillment, one of my fulfillment centers, I just have them watch the video. So I didn't have to explain it anymore. And then I realized I liked being on the microphone, like talking with myself. And then I started like, I have a fulfillment center in Utah. I have one in Sereno Valley. I have like different groups of people in different places. So I'm like, just everyone gather around a monitor and I'm going to show you guys how to do this. You know what I mean? And then it turned into a, holy shit, I have a bunch of different weird things recorded. And then when you get to talk to fucking crazy assholes like you on top of it as a side benefit, I'm like, this is gorgeous. This is like I was, this is totally in my lane and something if I had to not work ever again, not solve any problem ever, this is amongst the top things I would be doing. Like no question. It's just like learning from and hearing other people with different flavors. Like I'm interviewing, do you listen to gangster rap?
No, but I might go and try me.
Do you know
the game? Heavy metal. It's totally different. I love heavy metal.
I love heavy metal too. That's funny.
Pantera, my favorite band ever.
Got it. I grew up more in like a punk rocky. I listened to a lot of stuff. I grew up like a little more punk rocky, but like the first songs I ever learned to play that were hard was like, you know, Enter Sandman by Metallica and like, you know, dun, 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 you know, like really heavy, distorted, like unapologetic, like 80s and 90s heavy metal.
Yeah,
lost my train of thought again.
You said, "Am I into gangster rap?" That was where you started. Oh,
I'm interviewing the Game later today. You know who the Game?
Oh,
is?
Wow, yeah, I do. I've heard of them. Yeah, yeah, cool.
Yeah, and yeah. I'm like, what? How the fuck? Like,
yeah,
how is this coming about? And I'm talking.
You
to
don't
like,
even have to put into words. I know that feeling that you're trying to express. It's just like. It's like you're punching above your weight. You've got this gorgeous woman and you're like the biggest geek. How have I done this? What have I got? Yeah, I'm the same thing. I mean, what I try and do with my podcast as well is be on and interview people I'd want to get to know and I'd want to hang out with. You know, like I think you and I bust the mold in that, you know, like you don't just have to interview people who are into fitness and health or just have to interview people who are interested in business. You can interview people. I mean, if James Hetfield from Metallica said, can I come on your podcast? You're going to be like, oh, no, sorry. This is a health and fitness podcast.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Leave me alone. No way. I think he was on Tim Ferriss or Joe Rogan. I was the most jealous guy ever. I was like, I want you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm coming out with a 3-hour work week.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Fuck. I'm changing my name to Tim. Yeah. But it's cool. It gives a platform. So what's the next level for you, my dude?
The problem with being entrepreneurial, you know, solving problems, prolific, doing loads of things like many of us do, is you always think the next level's got to be something more. And I've got this mentor who's on a board and he's been on the board of some massive companies. And about 4 years ago, he sat me down and he said, Rob, you know what? Next year, you don't have to do 10 more things. You could do the 10 things you are doing 10% better. And that was another one of the jaws hit the floor moment because I was like, I've never even thought of that. So I'm going to write two more books.
That's a fucking powerful distinction, dude. I'm writing that one down. It's simple, right?
Yeah.
It's not a complicated thing, but it's so true.
Yeah, it's sometimes so true. What you've been doing for the last 10 years is what you should do next year, but just get 10% better. I want my podcast to get more reach. I want to keep buying properties, real estate in the UK. Mark and I have got a few big, my business partner, that is. We've got a few bigger developments that we do, but that's not really my time. I've just finished my 13th book. I'm starting my 14th book with-
What's the name of it? Hey, can you plug some shit? We can throw some affiliate links in the bio here. What do you want? Talk to my audience.
Okay, cool.
So what should they be buying? What should they be joining? What should they be doing courtesy of Rob Moore?
So my book, Money, has done well in the UK. It's a big, deep book on all things money, how to know more, make more, give more, the story, the psychology, the history. I've got my Disruptive Entrepreneur podcast. To be honest, if people find out, if you Google me or look at me on Amazon, especially .co.uk, you can find all my other stuff. I've got too many books to mention. I have a second podcast called Money. I fundamentally believe in the school system, and for young people, we're not taught enough about how to manage money. We're not taught about budgeting. We're not talking about, you know, like, there's a lot of addictions around money. You know, there's a lot of fear around money. No one knows how to manage money when you're in school. You get money, you spend it. You spend it to feel good. You spend it to get rid of emotions or to feel emotions. You know, I buy nice clothes to feel good. I go on a date and I pay for it to feel good. But actually, if you spend your money emotionally, you lose. So I really want to change the world, starting with the UK and then the world, and getting better money education. So all the problems that people have around money, you know, like there's a lot of people say that money doesn't make you happy. I say it fucking well does. You know, like, I've been poor and I've been rich. I've done the split test. I've been poor for 10 years. I've done that A-B experiment.
I love it.
You know, having a lot of money. I'm not having money for greed, but, you know, like, a lot of people want to give away to charity. Well, you can't give what you haven't got.
Amen.
So I'm trying to do a lot of work in that area on money, getting people to get rid of all their baggage. You know, it's ironic. I used to look at people who drove Ferraris, assuming that they'd nicked them or that they were drug dealers. And then, you know, like, I started buying Ferraris when I became successful, and I became the very person that I hated when I used to listen to Rage Against the Machine, and I hated capitalism and hated, you know, wealthy, greedy bastards. And then I'm the very thing I hated. But I realized I was judging a projected social stereotype because I never knew these people. I've got billionaires who are my mentors. I know people who are worth 500 million, 3 billion, 100 million, 50 million, and you cannot put them in a box. Some are short, some are tall, some are men, some are women, some are kind, some are, you know, quite selfish. Some, you know, are older, some are young, some are in tech, some are in real estate. You can't actually say, hey, a millionaire is this. A millionaire is a person who's learned to make £1 million and hold it. That's it. And so I changed my view on that. And I thought, instead of judging people, why can't I just learn from everyone? And that made my life a lot better. So yeah, my book money, my podcast money, my podcast, The Disruptive Entrepreneur. I've got loads of books coming out. So buy one and you'll find the rest.
If you ever need help, or just want a free fucking take you to school for 20 minutes with whoever is doing your marketing piece, I am a straight gangster on Amazon. I can show you in like 3 minutes some of the analytics that will, you'll be like, okay, you're my guy. And I don't give a shit. I don't need a piece of anything or whatever. I'm down to just gift it and let that one boomerang somehow, somewhere at some time down the,
thank you,
in the future. But, yeah. I'm a firm believer for authors. Amazon, especially if it's self-published, needs to be the main focus. Mm. And coming from a guy that was in over 3,000 brick and mortar retail stores nationwide and had my funnels and the stuff I was driving traffic to at a very high volume using affiliate marketing and having an e-commerce store, I'm producing, I don't know, 50x. On Amazon and in marketplace selling. And I do this, by the way, with exclusive distribution online for literally over 80 different companies. Then yeah. I'm their one guy. And Amazon is always my first go-to because they have a couple of hacks and a couple of things in their system that they still allow that I'm positive as soon as some programmer somewhere figures it out, it will no longer be available to you. But the amount of exposure for free that you get through Amazon, because everybody shops there, once you convince them, hi, I'm Rob Moore and I'm the hot girl at the bar and every guy in here wants to take me home, they just flaunt you around to everybody always for free. So the goal shouldn't be to sell copies. It should be to do everything to prove to Amazon that you will be able to sell copies and then you'll sell automatically. And I don't like getting products or books or whatever to the first spot. Yeah. I like dominating the first spot so hard and then building out the second spot, third spot, fifth spot, eighth spot. So out of the top 20, you own 8 of the slots for something that to the outside eye seems competitive, where someone goes shopping for a book about money and the odds are, what is that, like 43% rough math, right? Is going to be one of your products.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm super game to help you with a couple of things that I've Thank been you. Great at, but I want to read your book first to make sure that it's something that cool. I want to be slamming on. But if you're releasing a bunch of books too, it might be cool to start with those. I'm not sure yet.
Okay. Well, look, and any way I can help you back, that'd be great. I don't have anywhere near as much reach in America as well. So
freaking awesome. I would love to be your liaison. To be honest with you, I appreciate your persistence. You were not overly persistent. You were perfectly persistent with me. And I appreciate you having the stones and the awareness and like the peripheral insight to stay on the charts and be looking at what's going on around you. There's a lot to be said for awareness and keeping your eyes and ears open. I'm sincerely grateful for you reaching out and starting this connection. And I have a shit ton that I can learn from you. And I'm excited for where this relationship is going to develop. I have one last piece, Rob, which is define empowerment for me and tell me an actionable step that the listeners can take to live a more empowered lifestyle. What can somebody do to empower themselves?
I think love yourself, know yourself, express yourself, and expose yourself. I normally just spit it out, but I thought about this one a lot because I knew you were going to answer it. Love yourself, know yourself, express yourself, expose yourself. And exposing yourself is the action part. And because loving and knowing and expressing yourself but not having an audience, you know, you're doing it in a vacuum. And the exposing yourself is, hey, this is me, this is who I am. Please, I'd like some fans and followers and buyers, but I also accept the critics, the trolls and the haters. That's all part of the deal that you can't separate. People think they're going to have all the good and none of the bad. It's not how it works.
I think I'm going to steal that soundbite and put it in the front of the podcast.
Please.
I want all the haters and the fans. Or I'm sorry. I want all the followers, the fans and the customers, but none of the haters, the trolls and the critics. I like that one. It's true. You got to be able to take both. Outflow equals inflow. It doesn't mean outflow equals positive inflow.
Yeah.
Outflow equals inflow, period. Meaning like the amount of energy that you push out through your systems is the amount of shit and positive and negative and everything in between that you're going to get back.
Yeah.
So, all right, how does somebody help develop a love or a love for themselves? Because, I said it yesterday to one of my ambassadors who was sitting like literally right in front of me. I'm like, turn off the camera because we were getting so raw in what we were doing. I didn't even want the content. I just wanted her to like feel what I was saying, not in a content production way, because we were like just touching on such a nerve. And I'm like, what the fuck have you done that you don't believe, that you believe could ever be a justification from withholding love and approval of yourself from yourself? Because I'm looking at a person that is worthy and deserving of all of the fucking self-love in the world. And I'm going to venture to say, like, you're such a caretaker. Depriving yourself of that self-love is being a taker. You're not helping anyone or anything. In fact, you are just disempowering yourself to be able to empower all of the people that you care about, because you're not keeping the source strong, because you're not giving yourself that love and that warmth and approval and like that internal hug of like, I'm fucking proud of you type feeling. So how does somebody improve that?
We should do a part two on this. We should do one on my podcast. And we should just do all about self-worth, because I think it's huge. It's actually not that difficult. But what most people do is they pick holes in themselves by going, I did this, I messed up, why am I this, I'm a loser. Practice doing the opposite and catch yourself doing something good. Yep. And I'll give you an example. My son is 7. And I've obviously done some ridiculously stupid parenting skills that are like, you know, I deserve a slap in the face for it.
Rob, I literally have caught you being good cards that I give to know. They're literally called... Caught you being good cards.
That's perfect. I write on
the card what they are and I give it to him to reinforce
behavior
that is not like in the moment.
Yeah.
There's, like, here are the things I fucking love. I acknowledge.
Yeah. You know how good it makes someone else feel when you point out something that they do well. Human nature is to point out the negative, because the negative is the stronger energy and we need it for survival. But how good does someone feel when you say, hey, you're good at that? A genuine compliment.
Right.
That's exactly how you're going to feel if you do it to yourself. So when I started, like, if my kids were running around screaming and I didn't lose the plot and smash the whole kitchen, I deserve some love. You know, that is
a good thing. Yes. Yes.
Every day I don't punch my son in the face, but then love you there. I deserve a Parent of the Year award. I'll be honest,
Rob,
I'm still not
the best. I'm going to, if you haven't hit your kid, have you hit your kid today? Have you punched
him? No, I haven't hit my kid today. I'm
going to send you one of Noah's caught you being good cards, but I'm going to cross out Noah and I'm going to put Rob.
Yeah, please. So start catching yourself on all the great things you do in a day, the compliments you give, when you listen to someone intently, when you give a gift away, when, you know, when you manage your emotions well, when you don't, I used to get angry a lot. And I sometimes see holding emotion in and not letting it out as a weakness, i.e., oh, I'm scared of confrontation. But now if I hold an emotion and I stay cool when someone else is upsetting me, I'll go, you did good there. You didn't, you know, you didn't get all angry and emotional. You controlled it well. Well done. So catch yourself out doing as many good things as bad things, and your self-worth will start to change.
Fucking awesome. I love it. I think I said earlier, look for the things in people that impress you. Look for what impresses you in a person, and that's what they're going to show you. Mm. What you put your attention on expands. I'm going to interview T. Harv Eker actually next month. You know who that is?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
I'm a huge fan of T. Harv Eker. Mm. I grew up reading like Secrets of the Millionaire Mind and like all of his stuff. And then I've recently become friends with, he's like best friends with my dad now, or very, very close friends with my dad. And I'm very good friends with his son, Jesse, who I randomly knew from being a kid and had never connected that his dad was Harv, you know? Right. And I grew up very much like what you put your attention on expands. I didn't say it about like your own self-worth, but I think that's like potentially one of the more powerful gems. And I'm happy that we're like concluding on that subject, because I think you just smashed the nail on the head right there, is to catch yourself being good. What have you done to make yourself proud? And I did a podcast on self-worth, and that's actually one of the exercises that I say to do is like a series of self-acknowledgements.
Yeah.
What I like about you, what I love about you, what I respect about you, right? So I appreciate that. I appreciate you bringing it up, and I would love to do a podcast on self-worth and just sit here with my fucking notepad and see what I can spark and stimulate for you to just go on one of your 47-hour rants. Because you know what? Like I think a lot of people, like, look, I don't shy away from competition. I'm a viciously competitive motherfucker. I grew up in you know, training hard in Olympic judo and wrestling and MMA, and was captain of my hockey team, and I've always just been a very competitive guy. Mm. And I think that in this world of competition, and especially economic and marketplace competition, there's not really a lot of, like, the generation before us and the generation before that was like fighting in World War II and coming over to America from Ellis Island, and like, you know, they had it rougher than we did. So now people love to say, these whippersnappers, they don't know what tough is, blah, blah, blah. I think not a lot of people, because of just the way society is now, are loving enough with themselves.
Yeah.
Like, oh, millennials are entitled. It's like, who the fuck can say a generation is like anything?
That's the most ridiculous statement in the world. Everybody's an individual, and this is the thing that people miss. Every individual is worthy of love. Every individual has traits that are great, and every individual has traits that they are a disaster at. As Harv Eker, he always says, every master was once a disaster. So when you're balanced, and balance, I think, is, you know, self-worth, honoring your skills, but also owning your lacks, rather than arrogance is, you know, thinking you're great at everything, and low self-worth is thinking you're great at nothing. But every individual is unique, has amazing skills and talents. You know, like, I'll admire you for the work you've done in the health and the fitness and the real estate business. And there'll be things that I've done that maybe you haven't yet done, and you might admire in me. And if we cared about each other, we'd find that out, and we'd respect our differences. And you could put someone on a three-way in this podcast with us who's going to sit there and go, do you know what? I've got no skills. I'm a loser. And you and I, 5 seconds flat, could find something great at. They might be the best at computer games. They might be the best at some kind of you know, I know kids who are 7 years old who can remember numbers better than me. Everyone has skills and talents, and everyone has failures and failings. And just owning them both and being true about, you know, something that's great in business is, if you're smart, and I wrote a book on this called Life Leverage, all the things you're shit out and you hate, you can outsource to a VA.
Life Leverage?
Life Leverage, yeah.
That's a great name.
Thank you.
Did you come up with it?
Yeah. Well, actually, I generally tend to ask my community for help on titles and subtitles.
Awesome. Awesome.
There's more of a crowdsourced thing. So basically, you can own the things you're great at, knowing that you're not better or worse than an individual. As soon as you over or under pedestalize someone, you're out of balance. Look down on people, the world will put you back into balance by giving you lots of critics and giving you lots of problems. always looking like you're a victim, you know, then obviously the world will beat you down. So maintaining that balance of I'm worthy, but I'm not greater than any individual, putting ourselves all on an equal plane, I think that's balance and that's wisdom and that's self-love and that's love of other people. And I agree with you, the world needs a lot more of that. Yeah, okay, we're not in wars and we have got it easier in some ways, but we've got it harder in others.
Because, yeah, we invented podcasting. You guys didn't have to deal with RSS
exactly, yeah.
properly.
Just to let you know, I've got an interview at 7 o'clock, so I've got like 5 minutes left. I hate to end.
Bro, yeah. I'm way, way over time anyway. Rob, real quick, I want to fucking acknowledge you. I love the way that you're showing up in the world, dude. You are altruistic. You are a giver. You are a caretaker. You are a transmuter of knowledge. And you show up in a fucking manic, intelligent, interactive, engaging way. And I think the world could use more Rob Moores. Thank you so much for taking the time to spend with me, to enlighten me, to entertain me. Let's do this again. I would love to make a list of things that you would like my help with. Amazon is 1000% one of them. Like, I would love to hop on and just gift that to you. And they're unconditional, by the way. So just make a list of anything you see or anything you like or shout
out. I'm doing it right now. There's a little part of me that doesn't want to receive that gift. And I've got to coach myself on that. That's like, if people want to give you gifts, you've got to take them. Just take them.
Dude, receiving is a muscle.
Just give them money, £20 notes here and there, and no one can accept it. If you want to have some fun in your life.
I would.
Yeah, exactly. But go and have some fun in your life. Give people a massive tip or random £20 or $20 notes. They'll want to give it. They don't have to receive money.
I'm going to do that. Have you ever actually done that?
I do it all the time.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah. I even sometimes fear.
What happened? What happened?
Most of the time, people are like, no, I can't take it, no. And then there's a pause. And then they're like, wow, thank you. And then they're like, oh. So, yeah, there's always this resistance. And it just proves to me that most people can't receive money. Yeah.
Interesting.
That needs to be our part three, how to receive money.
Yep.
I'm taking some notes here because I'm going to call you up on this help because I need to get out there in America more.
Dude, I'm a great platform. Hey, also look up RevLabs Prez, which is my Instagram. It's spelled with a Z.
Oh, yeah, I follow you already. Yeah.
Oh, right on. And Liz Vino, LizVino, is my girlfriend and number two CFO for all my companies. There might be something to be done there.
Okay.
Because she fucking puts my following to shame. I also have, by the way, like, I don't know, over 200 athletes and influencers that work with RevLabs. So I don't know if there's a collaboration thing to be done there, but maybe I could pitch you people or you can do something to get them to, like, we're mostly American based, like America and Canada, which I attribute much of my podcast success probably to the support that I get from those people. Cause it's just traffic and free shouts and whatever. So maybe there's a way you can leverage my assets in that way as well.
Okay. That's very kind.
Cool. Rob, you're the man, dude. I'm going to sign off. Thank you so much for showing up. Hopefully this is the first of many. Inside Out Empowerment is written and produced by me, Joshua Nussbaum. When it comes to all things editing, mixing, mastering, I have to give hats off. Resonate Recordings has been amazing to work with. If you have a podcast or you're thinking about starting a podcast, I knew I had a bunch of stuff I wanted to say. Didn't really know how I was going to go about putting it into a podcast format, get it into an RSS feed, upload it to iTunes, all that stuff. And the owner of Resonate Recordings, Jacob, has really stepped up to the plate. Go ahead and mention Inside Out Empowerment when you talk to them and you'll get your first episode mixed and mastered for free. If you guys are looking to level up your life and be entertained in the process, go ahead and subscribe so you don't miss my weekly podcast. I'm highly responsive. Please, I'm going to leave the show notes below, complete with all the ways you can connect with me on Instagram at RevLabsPrez, on YouTube at Joshua Nussbaum. This is here for you guys. Please reach out, connect, like, comment, subscribe, ask me questions, tag me. I'm here for you. Let's tailor this bad boy and live an empowered life. Talk soon. Just watch me now.